Welcome back to the American Revolution Podcast, episode 52, Chevaux de Frise. I apologize for my absence last week. Unfortunately, I had a chest infection and I just could not get myself comfortable. A lot of sleepless nights, a lot of chest pain. So fortunately, that has passed. And this week, I'm going to probably put out two episodes, one today and then one towards the end of the week so that I can get back on track with the episodes I'm trying to put out. But in this episode, we're going to examine the use of chevaux de frise. But first, we have to know what they are. Cheval de frise, that's the singular pronunciation, were an anti-cavalry defense during the Middle Ages. They were developed by the Dutch, and they were standard military abatis that was used for protection against mounted troops. They're a pretty standard military abatis. The best way I can describe them is imagine the look of a sawhorse, if you will. And then off that kind of four-legged stanchion, you would have long pikes that would come off of it, sharpened pikes, that would basically be there in case the cavalry rode by. The best way I can put it is that they're there to protect against mounted troops coming through, best way to describe it. Either way, since the Middle Ages, they had been on the battlefield. They were very common. And in the summer of 1776, they're actually going to be re-engineered to protect the Hudson against the British Navy. So they're really going back to their roots in protecting the river from the naval cavalry, I guess you could say. Well, they're going to be developed by a Philadelphia carpenter named Richard Smith. He saw how well the land version worked, and he came up with plans for an underwater version. These could stop medium-sized warships. Smith presented his plans to Benjamin Franklin and the Pennsylvania Committee of Safety on July 24, 1775. They were simple but effective. Wood pikes would be attached to wooden caissons. The pikes had metal spearheads to tear at the bottom of the boat. To sink the caissons, they were filled with rocks. They wouldn't sink an enemy vessel, but they could slow them up and make the enemy ship an easy target for shore batteries. Now, the Delaware River would be the test run for this new type of defense. So they were put into place down the river from Philadelphia along a line in front of Fort Mifflin. By October of 1775, the popularity of Cheval de Frise was growing. All over the colonies, Continental commanders were looking to use them. Josiah Quincy in Braintree, Massachusetts, wanted to use them to block the narrow passages and channels in Boston Harbor. In May 1776, Bernard Arnold was in discussion with members of the Canadian Commission to talk of using them around Sorrel, but the water was still too high for the early spring. But when the Continental Army arrived in New York in the summer of 1776, Israel Putnam wanted to create a barrier reef with Cheval de Frise and sunken hulks. That's what they would call a sunken ship that they would use that would create a barrier. Now, the problem is the Hudson River itself. You see, the Hudson River was far deeper than the Delaware River. It had a faster current, and it was also subject to tides. But they really need to examine the situation for use of the Cheval de Frise in the Hudson River. Only problem was, we are now talking about the summer of 1776. Panic is running throughout the city. The Continental Army has moved itself to Brooklyn, New York City, Governor's Island, and up on the lower part of mainland New York colony. The British have, at this point, have landed at Staten Island. They're gathering their forces there. And we had talked about this when we were talking about the defenses of Fort Washington and Fort Lee. The British have already run up the Hudson River, creating all kinds of panic. They, at one point, shelled part of the city. So it was a real problem. And so the Continentals had to come up with some sort of deterrent for these ships. Now, we were once again getting back to Fort Lee, Fort Washington. When we talked about Fort Washington, we had said that the forts themselves were in a position that though was a good spot for a fort, they were kind of not really useful, I guess, is the way to put it. The underpowered guns, the position they were in, the ships were just running through. The ships had just run past the forts. So we need something to keep them from running upriver. And Israel Putnam was one of the bigger supporters of the chevaux de frise, saying that these types of defenses could work. They could hold the ships up long enough that our cannons can really do some serious damage to them. So a secret committee is formed. The secret committee would deal with the paying for the defenses, where they would go, what they would be, so on and so forth. The committee had a bunch of notable names. Its chairman was Robert Yates, and other members of the committee were Christopher Tappan. The Tappan Zee Bridge is named after him. Robert R. Livingston, his brother Gilbert Livingston, William Pauling, and John Jay. Yes, the lawyer John Jay, who the college is also named after. So with the limited funds that this secret committee has, they began plans for building chevaux de frise. By August 10th, the committee saw to the sinking of obstructions between Fort Washington and Fort Lee. Part of the problem, though, was the water depth. It ranges between 3 and 7 fathoms. For those that don't know naval terminology, that's about 18 to 42 feet. To offset this problem, the committee started looking for ships that could be sunk to fill in the deeper sections. The river defenses would not last long, though, as the Continental Army was pushed from New York City and Fort Washington and Fort Lee were captured. We see an end to the defenses at the lower part of the Hudson. Not that I really think it would have mattered much. I feel that the natural aspects of the Hudson River, at least in that area, the tides, the fact that it is far deeper than most other rivers, and seeing how fast the current is, that those defenses were not going to last long. That doesn't mean that they moved fully away from the use of chevaux de frise. We're going to see that with the fall of New York City and the failure of the Fort Montgomery chain, that is something that we're going to discuss actually in a future episode, the Northern Department Commander, Philip Schuyler, needed something to protect the upper port, a portion of the Hudson, south of Albany. You see, behind New York City, the next most important city in all of New York is what is the present-day capital, Albany. It had one of the larger ports on the upper Hudson and brought a lot of the products down from that area of New York State, or the New York colony now, and shipped them south to New York, which actually was the export port. So Philip Schuyler has to think about something. And we actually see him contemplate the use of chevaux de frise in a new location. But in the fall of 1776, Philip Schuyler will actually attempt to use the chevaux de frise up in Polapel Island. Now, he needed to make a defense line for Albany. It is an important port. We've already gone over that. So how is he going to do it? Well, the chevaux de frise would actually fit that bill. The river up there doesn't have as fast a current. It's not subject to tidal changes like the lower Hudson is. And actually, that section of the river is a little bit shallower than other parts. So it actually fit quite nicely. Now, the secret committee was not really too thrilled about Philip Schuyler taking over to this project and wanting to use it that way. But the other problem is, of course, that it became more of a logistical nightmare. You see, Polapel Island technically falls into the Highlands Department, but Philip Schuyler was kind of zoning in on that turf there. But in the end, everyone will let it go in the general interest of keeping British ships away from Albany. Especially with a bigger problem now, and we haven't discussed that yet, but when we get back up to the Northern Department, we're going to see that the British are moving south, and if British ships can get up to Albany, they're going to link up at Albany, and we'll have a real problem. So why don't we put chevaux de frise at Polapel Island? Everyone agrees to it. Now, work begins late. You see, when the plan is put into motion, it's actually in the later months of 1776, very close to winter. The real work starts in October, very beginning of November. So now we have axemen, lumberjacks, laborers working in these colder conditions, searching for lumber. Unfortunately, what happens in the fall? It tends to rain a lot more. What happens in the winter? It snows a lot more. So the wood is very is really waterlogged, which is going to make it a bigger problem because it's not going to hold up as well. You need drier wood that's been taken care of properly so that when you sink it, it holds that strength. So needless to say, they work tirelessly to sink the chevaux de frise. Luckily, the plan works, and they're actually able to get a line of defensive works put into place. They won't really be put to the test until later into 1777 when Clinton makes an attempt into the Highlands Department. That's something that we, of course, will talk about when that time comes. But the chevaux de frise are utilized in other rivers around the colonies, and they actually work to great effect. The Hudson is a unique area. The Hudson is real difficult for those types of defensive works to be applied due to the nature of the river itself. So when we get into a couple of weeks from now, we're going to talk about a different type of river defense. The one that's going to replace the chevaux de frise at Polypel Island is going to be a chain. And we hinted at it when we talked about Fort Montgomery's chain failing. So we're going to talk about Fort Montgomery's chain, but we're also going to talk about the eventual West Point chain, the more famous of the defensive works on the Hudson River, the chain that will keep the British off the Hudson River for a long time to come and to the end of the war, basically. So that's where we're going to leave off today. This was a short episode. And the chevaux de frise, they're not an exciting topic to talk about because either you can run the defenses or you don't. And in this case, they were not a great defensive work. So, excuse me, the British were able to run the defenses. When we get to something talking like what we're going to – the episode I'm going to probably put out at the end of the week, which is fire ships, they were definitely an interesting defense attempt where they Continentals basically tried lighting British ships on fire. So that's where we're going to leave it today. And so once again, I'm sorry for the delay, and I'm really sorry for the fact that this episode was shorter, but the topic itself is kind of dry otherwise. And so I gave you a basic background of the chevaux de frise. Next week, on Friday, I'm going to bring up some of the fire ships, and we're going to end with chaining the Hudson. And that will do it. And from then on, we are going to move to the campaigns in the Northern Department. So that will do it for me for at least the next few days. I will have a new episode out for you sometime Friday. I hope everyone has a great couple of days. And as always, keep that powder dry. Mm-hmm.